Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm David Knight. It's Monday, December 1st, 2014, and here are our top stories.
Tonight, season's greetings from Ferguson.
It raised a broader issue as to whether we are militarizing domestic law enforcement unnecessarily, and is the federal government facilitating that? I will be signing an executive order that specifies how we are going to make sure that that program is accountable, how we're going to make sure that that program is transparent.
Well, over the last several days, we've seen tremendous movements in the price of gold, the price of oil, both tumbling. Oil is at the lowest point it's been in 5 years. And of course, there's some interesting backstories in both of those. Let's look at gold first. The reason for its decline was a referendum in Switzerland. They were going to protect the currency by having it backed by at least a 20% gold standard. They were going to repatriate gold into the country, but that was voted down. 78% of the people in Switzerland voted against that conservative approach. Now, if it was an honest election, here's how they might have manipulated public opinion. We saw a lot of this from the mainstream press, from economists. For example, this is the chief economist at Citibank. The commodity, that is gold, is in a 6,000-year bubble. He said, no central bank should hold any gold reserves, in our view. He said, a central bank holding 20% of its balance sheet in any single commodity is, quote, highly unorthodox and a risky investment strategy. Very, very different from what we heard from Alan Greenspan just recently when he went before the CFR. And we covered this back with an interview with Ted Anderson just a couple of weeks ago as we were talking about what was happening with gold. Gold at the time was going up because most people thought Switzerland would do the rational thing and back their currency with gold. But that didn't happen, mainly because of lies like this. But here's what Alan Greenspan, former chair of the Federal Reserve, said about gold. He said, gold is currency. No fiat currency, including the dollar, can match it. That's what Alan Greenspan said. Yet, in the run-up to this referendum, we hear this banker from Citibank saying gold is in a 6,000-year bubble. In other words, it's been overrated through entire human history. That's the kind of lies that prevailed, apparently, in this referendum. And so now gold that had hit about $1,400 dropped into the $1,100 range, rebounded about 4% today into the $1,200 range. Now, Russia's currency dropped 4%, not having anything to do with gold, but having to do with oil. We see that Saudi Arabia is making a major move against U.S. oil shale. They're trying to basically price oil so low that they put American producers out of business. But of course, another objective of this is to make a move against Russia. That is also in the interest of the globalists and in the interest of a regime like Saudi Arabia that's essentially a monarchy highly connected to the U.S. CIA. They would dearly love to move against Russia. We see that Russia and China and India and Brazil are all directly trying to go around the petrodollar, directly changing and exchanging their money for commodities. This is a direct strike against them, as we see happening in the Ukraine, but it's primarily against U.S. oil shale. That's the main obvious game. As the Telegraph points out, the U.S. had a trade deficit of $354 billion in oil and gas as recently as just 3 years ago. Now it looks like, because of the changes in shale oil and natural gas, it looks like we could become a net exporter of crude oil and petroleum products combined by 2019, if not 2018. So Saudi Arabia is making a move to shut down our domestic production of oil and gas, to shut down our energy independence. That's what our ally is doing. Now, they're pointing out that that may be a gamble that they may not win. Right now, it's headed, they say, down to about $40 per barrel. But they're saying in North Dakota's Vast Bakken Field, the company that works there said that they can handle $42 per barrel. They may even be able to go down to $28 per barrel in that location. That may not be a gambit that pays off for Saudi Arabia. And of course, it's going to have tremendous political gamble for them because they may not be able to drive U.S. shale oil producers out of business, but it also carries a political risk for them. As the article points out here, it will heighten geostrategic turmoil across the Middle East. But of course, it's all part of trying to kill our energy independence, to try to bring down the United States. And of course, That's one of our closest allies in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, an ally of the CIA, not of the American people. But of course, the government is also targeting our lives, not just our economy. Look at this story. Up on InfoWars.com today, vaccines will be made from human cancer tumors. That's right. They went back and looked at hearings from the FDA. And what they're saying is the method of producing vaccines using cells derived directly from human cancer tumors has been approved, even though the vaccines may induce cancer in recipients. This method is cheaper and faster than breeding animals for the culture media, and human cancer tumors are readily available because of other things that they're putting in our food supply, because of other additives that they put into our vaccines. Look at what they said in these hearings. You've got one doctor saying the vaccines may cause cancer tumors in recipients. He says, we have really identified three major factors that could potentially convey risk from tumor-derived cells. These include the cells themselves. Another doctor says they will cause tumors. He says, what I think is qualitatively different about the tumor cell lines is the fact that they can cause tumors. And then finally, this will take decades. As a third doctor points out, certainly if you're going to address the question about tumor risk of vaccines and tumor cell lines, it's going to have to be a decades question. In other words, you're going to have to look at this over a long period of time. This isn't something that's going to be solved with a very short study. They know what this is going to do. Listen, if you've got cancer tumors loose in your body, that's essentially metastatic cancer waiting to happen. I mean, it's on the move. It's going to present itself as tumors in other parts of your bodies. Amazing that they would directly inject cancer tumors into the human body because it simply delivers their drug more cheaply and more effectively. Well, stay with us. Right after the break, we have an after-action report with our reporters who were on the scene in Ferguson, Jakari Jackson and Joe Biggs. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
For all of recorded history, civilizations around the world praised the health benefits of silver. At InfoWars Life, our mission is to bring you the highest quality, purest, cleanest, effective colloidal silver on the market today for the lowest price available. You don't have to be a doctor to know the fall and winter months are the most dangerous time of year in North America when it comes to you and your family's health. InfoWarsLife.com is very excited to announce our biggest run yet of Silver Bullet Colloidal Silver, exclusively available at InfoWarsLife.com. Now, InfoWarsLife.com has taken colloidal silver to the next level using a cutting-edge technique that is free of toxic artificial additives. Now more than ever, it's important to stock up on high-quality Silver Bullet from InfoWarsLife.com and to help others during Christmas by teaching them about the powerful benefits of silver. Secure your Silver Bullet today at InfoWarsLife.com or by calling toll-free 888-253-3139.
The average person's life is filled with unexpected challenges. Unlock the energy it takes to defeat these daily beasts with Super Male or Super Female Vitality, specifically designed to assist the body in regulating proper hormone balance to create superior vitality in males and females. Supercharge and conquer your world at InfoWarsLife.com or call 1-888-253-3139.
Introducing the first proprietary oxygen-based intestinal cleanser, OxyPowder. Backed by FDA-approved phase 1, 2, and 3 clinical trials. All the toxins from the air, the food, the water, ultimately ends up in the gut or affects the gut. Take your health into your own hands and start cleansing your body today with OxyPowder. Secure your OxyPowder today at InfoWarsLife.com. That's InfoWarsLife.com.
Well, today our reporters who are live on the scene in Ferguson, Jakari Jackson and Joe Biggs, are back with us in the studio to kind of do an after-action report. Now, one of the things I want to look at is the provocations that occurred on both the side of the system, as we'll put it, because it's not just the police and their actions on the street, but it's also the grand jury system, and there's a whole history about that. But we're also going to talk about what happened on the other side. How do we distinguish the rioters from the demonstrators? And then, of course, there's the innocent people in the middle, the hardworking small businessmen who I believe were probably going to, for the most part, be run out of business. Welcome back, guys.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be back.
Glad to see you made it back safely.
Yes.
Yeah, I've caught up on much needed rest after this trip.
Well, you know, we're looking at what happened there. And I guess let's start with the businesses, because we talked to Stuart Rhodes with Oath Keepers last Wednesday. And they had voluntarily protected without pay. And they're not security guards, and we're going to talk about that later on as what happened after the report. It got a lot of attention from the local press as well as the scrutiny of the feds and the local police there. So we're going to talk about what's going on there as they try to protect for free some businesses there. But a lot of businesses basically just trusted the community, mm-hmm. and things didn't work out too well for them.
Yeah, we met a couple people out there the night they announced the decision for Darren Wilson not to indict him. And one of the ladies we met, she had worked at a barbershop right there on West Florissant. That's where a lot of the action took place, where the McDonald's is, where the Quick Trip is. And she decided not to board up her business. And we asked her, why didn't you board up your business like many other people had? And she said, I had faith in my community. We met a guy who was across the street. He had a cell phone store, and he said a similar thing. Mm-hmm. But the thing about this, David, is that many of the people who were coming in to cause these problems, they weren't from the city of Ferguson, yeah. Missouri. They came from other parts of St. Louis, so they came from Chicago, and they came out there to kick up stuff, burn buildings down, loot, and then leave these people with the bill for it. So a lot of the things that you see on TV, even though it's being blamed on the people in Ferguson, and I'm sure there were some people out there from Ferguson as well, but many of them were from outside communities.
And, you know, I think, Jagari, there's some parallels there. We look at the police community and the sense that you've got outside agitators from Washington are basically coming in and changing the way they interact with the community, changing the training, having a shoot-first approach. And we've seen that happen in New Mexico, where the police shootings there per capita are so much worse than they are anywhere else in the country. And just recently, an instructor with New Mexico State Police Academy said, this is a shoot-first curriculum that you're teaching. I'm not going to have anything to do with that. And then recently, we've seen rookies who have just basically come out of this kind of instruction with their guns drawn, shooting a man who just enters a stairwell without any warning, or pulling up and shooting a 12-year-old that's holding a BB gun without any warning. The rookie jumps out. There's an experienced guy driving, but it's the rookie that does the shooting because that's the way they're being trained. So we've got outside provocateurs from outside of the area coming in and changing the police departments and essentially jeopardizing them, because when people realize that the police are going to shoot first, that's going to really change things on the street. It's already changing people's attitudes. But there's also, I think, a naivete that the people in the community had, thinking that there wasn't going to be anybody from outside the community, that there wouldn't be any bad apples even within the community that would do anything to them, and just trusting that. And I think we see that same type of thing happening inside the police force, where they're very reluctant to take any action to purge out those within them who are bad actors. Over and over again, we've seen Frank Serpico and others say, look, you're going to have bad people in the police. It's a cross-section of society. Mm-hmm. So you have to punish the bad guys in the police department just like you have to punish the bad guys outside the police department. Yet they seem to be unable to believe that there's bad guys in their community, just like the shop owners couldn't believe that there's bad guys in the community. And they're burning down real police departments in a way.
Exactly.
I mean, the actions I see from police now are very similar to when I saw combat in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. You know, you go in automatically, guns drawn, shoot to kill mentality. You know, but now the way the military has shifted the rules of engagement, it's you don't fire unless you're fired upon. That's the mentality that protect and serve should be. That's what the police officers should have. And they have made this transformation to coming out and, you know, routine traffic stops. I've been pulled over and the police officer already has his gun drawn for no reason, you know. So that mentality has got to stop, or we're not going to see these killings go down anytime soon.
Yes.
You know, the police brutality is out of control. It is rampant across this entire country. And like you said, I mean, these guys have that shoot first mentality, and that's just something that's got to be stopped.
And we've got some statistics that we're going to cover about whether or not that we really have a kind of a war zone that they need to be that concerned about. The statistics don't support that. We're going to have that as well. But before we go on to talk about the grand jury and talk about the number of police killings that are out there, let's talk a little bit about what you guys saw in terms of deliberately standing down from protecting businesses, because there's been a lot of pushback against some Oath Keeper volunteers trying to protect one building with four businesses in it, a mixture of Asian, black, and white businesses, owned businesses, and trying to protect that one building. And, of course, they've pushed back quite a lot against them, really threatened them mm-hmm. with arrest because they said you need to have a security guard license. They're not doing it for employment. They're doing it for free. And so that's not a legal requirement. But talk about how they stood down.
Yes, we saw right across the street immediately after the decision was announced, you know, they were broadcasting it live via a radio system. And, you know, people kind of freaked out, you know, oh, man, you know, they had various reactions to it. And immediately somebody came across and threw a bottle and it busted out the windows of the Ferguson Fire Department, which is right next to the Ferguson Police Station. More than that, right across the street, they had various businesses, a cell phone store, a Boost Mobile store that got robbed, got looted. And it just shows you, and it's not even so much knocking the police, but everybody has this mentality that if it gets bad, I'll dial 911 and the police will come and save me. A building right across the street from the police department
got robbed. Not even 100 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, they could have done things preemptively. They were talking about how they had thousands of National Guard that were going to be there, and yet they pulled them back and didn't use them.
See, and that's what I didn't understand about Monday night. All right, we know the verdict's coming out. We knew that at 1 o'clock in the afternoon when him and I were sitting at the Clayton Justice Center, which is a little bit further south of Ferguson. And they're like, all right, we're going to release it at 4, then 5. And then we find out 8 o'clock Central Time. And I'm like, okay, you're going to do this at nighttime when we can't see what's really going on. This is a setup.
And more to that Biggs is talking about, they've been having those protests outside the police station regularly. And what time do the people get there? 8, 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're going to wait till you have the optimum amount of people out there in front of the police station. They also had more police officers and National Guard, and so police at that point. But, you know, you're going to wait till everybody is there and then release it. That was just,
designed to fail.
Well,
they
even had
nighttime curfews because they knew that back in August when things
were It was about 2 hours after the verdict, I would say, maybe an hour and a half when we went over to West Florissant.
Mm-hmm.
Hour and a half, 2 hours maybe. We get over there, and at this point, I remember, you know, we were live, and I'm sitting here talking about how there were hundreds of SWAT police officers out there. When you say just tons.
Yeah, heavy armor,
everywhere,
MRAs, all that stuff.
Meanwhile, a mile and a half away, you've got West Florissant Avenue burning to the ground. By the time we get out there, I counted 20 officers. That's it.
Yeah.
You have fire trucks out there. There were way more firefighters on the ground trying to extinguish these fires to save businesses. And you didn't see any of these police officers help protect the firefighters or stand in front of the businesses. They all lined up at the road at the McDonald's and stayed away from where everything was going on. They
or
cowered.
They get in a line and get provocative, like getting in front of people's face and like, don't cross.
Oh, they were more worried about us walking behind them than they were about the people out there doing donuts in the road and shooting guns out the side of the window.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that one of those rounds could have hit one of those firefighters who was just simply trying to save a business in the community.
And so we see them getting very provocative with peaceful protesters, but totally standing down and leaving the area when there's any violent crime.
That's much like we saw in August. And they said, oh, you know, we've learned from our mistakes in August. You know, we've come up with a standard on how we're going to deal with the situation if it happens again. And quite frankly, I didn't see that on Monday. You know, I praised a good bit of the way the police officers handled the week prior and some of the smaller protests. They weren't violent, really. You know, they just kind of went after some people and they arrested three people a day or so. But Monday night when the indictment or the non-indictment was out, just complete collapse.
Yeah,
it seemed like they didn't have any.
Yeah.
I mean, here we are. There's 2,200 National Guard in the area.
Right up the road.
And they're
right up the road.
You know what they're guarding? Don Lemon. Fox News, CNN,
go.
All those guys are driving their little Humvees around.
The media, media area that's last time was the martial law command base. It's right up the street. We walked there in real time. It took us, 3 minutes to get there from the McDonald's?
Well, let's talk about it. We talked about how the timing of it was provocative, but even the fact that they didn't return an indictment, I believe, was provocative because they could have had a trial where people could have examined the evidence in public instead of having the secret trial. So people could have gradually digested what happened if they, in fact, had evidence that would clear the officer. That could have been done gradually, could have been done openly. Instead, what we got was a grand jury system, which is always done secretly and in private. They typically don't release any information about the grand jury's proceedings. They typically always turn an indictment. We've had in 2010, the most recent year that the government has released statistics, we had 162,000 grand juries convene. Mm-hmm. All of them except 11 returned an indictment. essentially, it's to say that we're going to look further at this. And if you've got a prosecutor, and the reason that happens is because in a grand jury, it is not a trial. I don't want to hear people saying, we had a trial. We did not have a trial. In a trial, you have an adversarial relationship, you have a jury, you have a judge, you have transparency. We didn't have any of those things. We had a prosecutor who didn't want to prosecute. He was essentially the defense attorney. You would not have a defendant, if you're a legitimate lawyer, you would not have your defendant go before a jury and a prosecutor with no judge and the defending attorney not present for 4 hours to testify unless you knew going in that it was going to be, he was going to get softball questions or he was going to be let off. And now that we see these, they say, okay, we're going to make it transparent, which they typically don't do. I've called to check on indictments about people before, and if I can get through and talk to the district attorney, they will not tell me anything about the grand jury. They'll say, you know, that's secret. It's not sealed, and you know, can't release that and everything. But he's releasing the documents, but he released thousands of pages all at once. And so now you've got crowdsource operations going through, looking at what was discovered and what was not discovered, because it wasn't a prosecution. It was actually a vindication of Darren Wilson and a vindication of this prosecutor for not moving forward and having a trial. That's why he called the grand jury. He didn't need to have a grand jury. He could have indicted him himself, and he could still have indicted him. It was a way to clear himself, but it was also extremely provocative.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, people were very skeptical about this even before it was announced, you know. And people always ask the question, well, you know, I wasn't there. I don't know what to say, you know. But the thing about that is, I've dealt with a lot of police officers. I know you have as well, David, mm-hmm. dealing with PIOs, trying to get the most basic of information. And I used to work at a jail. I read a lot of police reports, and I also talked to a lot of inmates, you know. And then you have the person who says, I'm completely innocent, and you have the officer who says, this person is completely guilty. And the truth is usually someplace in the middle.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not as innocent as he wants you to believe, but he's also not, you know, the devil himself like the officer is trying to portray him to be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have to make these mediums. And yes, a lot of the people who had the original testimony about what happened to Mike in the street that day, they changed their stories. And that's a lot of things that you don't know exactly what to believe. But, you know, I think that can be possible for the police side as well.
Yes.
I don't think one side has
any challenging.
Yeah, you don't really
okay.
have any real opposition towards that story.
The way I saw the police handle stuff in August, when we went that first week, Jakari and Josh and I were there, I knew that he would not be indicted.
Oh, yeah.
Just the way they handled stuff, the way they covered up a lot of things, I had that feeling. I said it a few times, like, he will not be indicted. And I think most people who lived in that area felt the same way as well. You know, the way they handled this, I mean, definitely not a speedy trial or, you know, speedy. It wasn't taken care of fast in any way. It seemed like it was drawn out long on purpose, you know, releasing the information at 8 o'clock at night. This all seemed like a giant setup from the get-go.
Well, again, remember, 2010, 162,000 federal cases, only 11 people were not indicted by a grand jury. But when you look at it from the perspective of the police, they said there's a recent Houston Chronicle investigation found that police have been nearly immune from criminal charges and shootings. In Harris County, grand juries haven't indicted a Houston police officer since 2004. Mm-hmm. In Dallas, grand juries have reviewed 81 shootings between 2008 and 2012 and returned only one indictment out of 81 of the shootings. So it's basically the other way around. So you've got a 99.99% chance of getting indicted if you're not a policeman, but you've got like a 99% chance of getting off if you are a police officer.
And talking about these actions of the police officers, there's this image right behind us. I still want to know who this guy is. I want to know why this guy hasn't been in trouble, why he's aiming a gun at people inside of a crowd. Peaceful. I think this was the day they fired the tear gas, if I'm not mistaken.
That was the day they all rolled up
down
the street
together.
Yeah, they rolled
up. You know, right after the police chief said there's no curfew, then they come out with the MRAPs, heavy armor, aiming guns at people in the crowd. Go home, you're going to be arrested. That sounds like a curfew to me. But these guys haven't faced any disciplinary action that I know of.
Exactly.
So if you're in the crowd, and I was speaking to an officer, this was off camera back in August, and then he said, well, we have to come out there and crack down because you have guys out here throwing bottles at the officers. I said, you know, if you had two guys throw bottles at a county fair, you wouldn't tear gas the entire fair and start shooting people with rubber bullets.
Well, and of course, they haven't done that when they have sports riots, which are just as bad in terms of buildings being torched, cars
being flipped over. Yeah,
you know, you have that type of thing because people are happy or they're upset about a sporting event. They don't come down with an iron fist.
What happens when you corner something? Anything.
Mm-hmm.
You have that urge to fight back. They cornered those people in that area, they were blocked off on both sides of the road. You had nowhere to go. And then you have these guys jumping out of the top with sniper rifles pointed at people. You know, when you're out there and you've got kids and grandparents around, you know, and you're a young guy and you see laser dots, you know, popping up on children and elderly, you're going to get angry. Yeah. They incited most of the violence every time. You know, when we were out there in front of the police station, most of the night there was a lieutenant, I never got his name, handled the men really well. He kept them back, and they didn't use shield or anything like that. They just sat there in regular uniform, hands in their pockets with like a winter coat. No instances. Nothing happened. Some people would refuse to get out of the road, and they'd get arrested. But it would never lead to any kind of bad violence until that kind of stuff right there would happen. Exactly. When they show up in all that equipment, and you're sitting there like, all right, we're out here protesting. Some people are refusing to get out of the road. That doesn't mean you should have a gun pointed at you. Every way they handled the situation was just completely wrong. They incited the violence. They wanted it. That's what they want.
Yeah, absolutely. This particular prosecutor has a long history as well. Since 2000, they've had 14 police shootings. They've only had convened a grand jury indictment four times. They haven't had any indictments. But going back even to 1992, because what he did in this trial is something he'd never done in his career before, and that is saying he's going to have a full trial with all the evidence. Typically, grand juries are a very short-term thing. It's a kind of a cursory next step to a full investigation, to a real trial. But going back, they took in this article from Mother Jones. They went all the way back to his history, to 1992. And in that situation, you had a man who was 62 killed, okay, white man. This is not a white against black. This is not somebody being singled out. This man was killed by a police officer who hit him with his car as he was chasing somebody else. Now, what this prosecutor said was, he said, well, yes, officers in pursuit need to use not just their lights but their sirens. This officer did not have his sirens on. And he goes, but then that begs the question as to what is pursuit, because this only went on for 0.2 miles. So I don't think he was really in pursuit, so we're going to let him go. It's that kind of, you know, prevarication against something where they're not necessarily that this is premeditated, not necessarily this is something that was targeted, but it was misconduct. And they turn the other way and look the other distance, even on something like this. They basically give it a pass and prevaricate over the idea of what is legitimately pursuit or not. Clearly, he was pursuing the guy and not doing it in terms that he should have done.
Oh, yeah. We see this all too often, not just in Ferguson, but in many other cases as well. We talk about the situation that happened in Albuquerque. You know, they shoot a guy who's homeless. He's camping out in the woods or whatever. You know, he says, I'm going to walk down. Please don't shoot me. As soon as he walks down, flashbang grenades, guns go off, dog attacks him. They shoot him multiple times while he's on the ground. A situation like Kelly Thomas out there in California. Yeah. You know, they beat the guy to death over the course of 20 minutes on camera. The cops get off.
A white guy?
Yeah.
Son of a police officer who taught, you know, and who was an instructor teaching people how to handle encounters like that. And yet the rules have changed from when he was a police officer to today. And that's the thing that is really concerning. But there's another part of this. And, of course, we have a story that's up on Infowars.com. Darren Wilson and the Reality of Blue Privilege. And this is what the St. Louis County police detective who inaugurated the investigation said. He said, anytime I'm involved in an officer-involved shooting, fatal or otherwise, it's always during my initial investigation listed as an assault on law enforcement. Okay. Officer Wilson was the victim of the assault we were investigating. That's the presumption that he comes into with it. Okay. That he's exonerating a victim. And that's what we saw being presented, as if you look at the testimony within the grand jury, that's the way they presented it. That is a systemic problem that needs to be addressed. And the thing I'm concerned about is how this has been spun racially to avoid addressing the real systemic issues that are here, that go to the training, that go to the union involvement, that go to the law enforcement bill of rights Joe Biden put in after so many different attempts to give them a different treatment before the law. Go ahead.
And you're not even going to hear MSM, you know, Fox or CNN talk about stuff like that. You know, another way that they help fuel this entire racial thing, they go, Mike Brown, the 18-year-old kid, was killed by Darren Wilson, the white officer. They can't go... An 18-year-old man was fatally shot by an officer. They help fuel that racial war. And, you know, what it does is it gets people angry.
Yeah.
You know, and then it also takes away the focus on what's really going, like you said,
yes,
the actual issue that's underlying there, the training, what's going on, or lack thereof, I should say.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, that's something that needs to be fixed. And that's another thing that makes me always feel like, all right, this seems like a big setup, because they don't even cover those issues. All they care about, white, black, white, black, black, white.
Yeah.
What color, color, color. That's all you see. Mm-hmm.
What do you think about Obama's response to this? Basically, I've heard him say a couple of things. Number one, he wants more federal involvement.
I'm sure he does.
Okay. That's always a solution to everything, right? And then he wants to look at racial quotas and racial mixtures between the different. So again, more federal government, and let's make this all simply about race.
Well, I found it interesting too that he gets Leslie McSpadden, you know, Michael Brown's mother, to go to the UN and talk about the militarized police and all that as well. I thought that was a very weird move, and I didn't really understand that. What'd you think about that?
Well, you've got the federal government under its, I think it's section 1033, where they're pushing all of this equipment onto local law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Really, really hard pushing on it. At the same time, this last summer, most people don't realize that they stopped a 60-year-old program to give surplus equipment to firefighters who really need that equipment. Mm-hmm. They don't. These are small rural departments that don't have the money to buy this, but they came up and said, we're not going to give that to you anymore because we're going to now enforce an EPA ruling that's 25 years old that we've never enforced before. They were more concerned about emissions from their military vehicles that didn't meet EPA specs than they were about the pollution from the forest fires. I mean, it was clearly, you know, a ridiculous rationalization, and they got political support because firefighters get organized, so they got that rescinded. But you can clearly see in that that the police are, that the federal government is desperate to militarize the police, to equip them, as well as the training that we're talking about. They want to put that militarized equipment in their hands. That, in and of itself, makes them approach the public differently.
And then, you know, the statement, we gave it to them, but we didn't think they would actually use it.
Yeah.
And we don't just see this in Ferguson. I believe it's Ohio State has MRAPs now. School systems in San Diego have MRAPs now. So it's a growing trend, you know, from the biggest cities to the smallest. Podunk, sheriff's departments, police departments are gearing up with all this type of gear. And like you said, they have the training or the lack thereof to use these things properly. Do they need them at all in some cases? You know, the initial days kind of in Ferguson, you know, I understand you had the riots and the looting and the burning buildings. They burned down the Quick Trip and all that. But it wasn't deployed for that. It was deployed for the peaceful demonstrators who were out there in the street that the police had blocked off. Mm-hmm. Because you see so much in the MSM, the rioters or the mob or whatever they want to call them had the streets blocked off. Back in August, the police had those streets blocked off from both ends. Mm-hmm. And the people just got in the middle. So they said, well, the street's blocked off. We might as well just get out here and do what we want to do. So, you know, it's the training, it's the shoot first tactics, it's the brutalizing tactics, the intimidation tactics. Mm-hmm. This is what's fueling a lot of the animosity towards the police.
Now, we're almost out of time, but before we leave, two things I want to look at. And number one, we see over and over again, just as we saw the fellow who was shot in between the riots in August and what just happened, we saw the fellow shot in Walmart because he had a BB gun.
Mm-hmm.
Some guy called it in to 911. They failed to return an indictment there. We see this happening over and over again. We usually don't get to see what happens. We say, how could they possibly do something like that? Well, here's some glimpse as to how they can possibly do something like that. As people have gone through this document dump that was designed to deliberately bury any relevant information in a mountain of useless stuff, some people have already uncovered some of these things. Let me just read a few of these to you real quickly. Wilson washed away any evidence of blood. The first officer to interview Wilson failed to take any notes. He said, well, I didn't take notes because at that point in time, I had multiple things going on in my head. Besides what Darren was telling me, he didn't take any notes. He didn't record it with his recording machine. The investigators failed to measure the distance between Brown and Wilson. And I've heard Fox commentators saying, well, he was only 10 feet away. You know how quickly somebody that's 6'4" can close a 10-foot distance? No, they were also saying that it was 150 feet away. Mm-hmm. So what was it? Was it 10 feet? Was it 150 feet? They didn't think it was very important. He says, somebody shot somebody. This is what they came out in the grand jury. The guy says, somebody shot somebody. There was no question as to any distance or anything of that nature the time I was there. Not relevant. It is relevant, okay? Investigators did not test Wilson's gun for fingerprints. He said there was a struggle going on, mm-hmm. right? And that he lost control of the gun. He didn't have the gun. Well, Brown's fingerprints should have been all over the gun.
All
they
over
didn't
it.
Test it. He wiped it clean, okay? And Wilson did not immediately turn his weapon over to investigators after killing Brown, and on and on. An initial interview with investigators was delayed while he traveled to the hospital. He told he testified that he didn't really feel like he needed to be in the hospital because his wounds weren't significant. And when you look at the pictures, no, they weren't. So you see this type of thing happening over and over again, and we see from the Law Enforcement Bill of Rights that is exactly the type of thing that happens over and over again.
Oh, yeah, and just speaking about the distance between Darren and Mike Brown, you know, he said he had the initial confrontation where Mike reached in the window and they were struggling over the gun. He said he tried to fire the gun and he had his hand jammed in the trigger guard, and he couldn't fire it. You know, this is all relevant information, particularly when you're talking about the fingerprints. And then, you know, he does the interview with, what's it, Stephanopoulos, mm-hmm. and he says Mike was about, you know, 35 feet away, but the prosecutor said he's about 150 feet away.
You know,
that's a big difference.
If you got an unarmed man and he's 150 feet away, that's a big difference versus, you know, 35 feet or versus 10 feet.
You know, especially a guy the size of Mike, you know, a guy 6'4", almost 300 pounds. He's not, you know, the fastest guy on the planet.
The system is lying to us. The system is covering stuff up. But at the same time, it's also lying to the police. And one of the things that it's lying about is their risk on the street. They tell them with the killology course that I just talked about that's being taught in Albuquerque that it's a war zone. There's people out there that don't want you to go home and see your family tonight. You have to take care of them before they get you. Pushing that narrative mm-hmm. all the time. Is that really true? No. We have an article here from Zero Hedge. A recently published FBI report accidentally proves that while the police claim cops face growing threats from a rowdy population, the opposite is true. Now, this is what they found. They found that they had 76 law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty in 2013. 27 of those were felonious. In other words, involved with a gun or a struggle, okay? Half of them, the rest of them, were killed in accidents, like automobile accidents. And they say half of those were officers who weren't wearing their seatbelts that they regularly ticket people for. So you see that you've got, in most of these cases, it is not that they're in that high a danger, especially when you look at the number of police officers who are killed versus the number of people that they do kill. It is way out of proportion.
Yeah, definitely agree on that.
Yeah.
It's mind-blowing to see how they've handled this entire situation. You know, when you go out there and you point guns at people, you come out in riot gear.
Yeah.
You know, that, to me, that goes, okay, you want to start something.
Yeah.
You know, and then when you have these outsiders out here, these agitators, I mean, all that does is just fuel that battle.
And it's the rules of engagement that they're pushing on them. To sum things up, he's got two summaries here. He says, first thing we learned from looking at these statistics is that police are schizophrenic in their belief that they're in danger. Okay, the statistics do not bear it out. But that's what they're being told in their training. That's what they're being told by their supervising officers. He says, second, we see that militarization is working for the police. He says the number of people that the police kill every year continuously reported claims around 400. This is already almost 15 times more than police who are intentionally killed. However, the 400 figure is a result of 17,000 local police agencies being allowed to self-report. So mm-hmm. they don't even collect the statistics for most of these people. That's exactly what Serpico has said.
Oh, yeah. And you're talking about the training these guys get. We can wrap it up, you know, going towards the no hesitation targets that
yes.
Paul did the articles about. You know, whether it's, you know, some old guy with a shotgun, a little boy with a little pistol, you know, it's speaking about the young man with the BB gun. It's this
yeah.
kind of training that anybody's a potential threat. Okay, maybe somebody does have a gun or something that looks like a gun. Let's get out. Let's see if we can defuse the situation, even if you have to draw on them for your own personal safety. Do you have to shoot a child after immediately hopping out of a car? Speaking
Absolutely.
Of the 12-year-old.
So, yeah, that's the way we would wrap this up is to tell police officers that for your own good, for the sake of the community, for the sake of the country, you need to understand that you're being fed a line that really isn't true about the danger that you're facing out there. We understand that you're operating in a dangerous environment. But at the same time, we see police officers in Alaska, rural Alaska, where they're not armed, in a report saying that their most effective tool is their mouth. Being smart about how they engage people, not being provocative. Understand that you're being manipulated by the federal government, the same people that are now saying that because of what happened in Ferguson, as they deliberately, with their policies, with the judicial system that they failed to justify what they were doing, those same people, as they build up tensions, are now saying that we need to focus more on race and we need to have more federal involvement. That is not the answer. Well, that's it for tonight. Thanks for joining us. If you're watching this on YouTube, Please remember to subscribe to our channel. And if you're not a subscriber to Prison Planet TV, it's a way that you can support our operation, a way that you can send reporters like Jakari and Joe on these trips to get firsthand information to see firsthand what the mainstream media is not telling you. Right now, we have a holiday special on InfoWars, so check that out. We'll be back tomorrow at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Celebrate the spirit of freedom and liberty upon which our nation was founded at InfoWarsShop.com. Molon Lave is ancient Greek for come and take it. This popular design combines both classic Greek Spartan imagery with modern M16 assault rifles. Now available in women's tees and proudly made in the USA. Celebrate the spirit of 1776 with the George Washington brass belt buckle or this incredibly sharp-looking 1776 hat. Badass. And be sure to check out the new arrivals at InfoWars Life, where you can prepare your body to perform at peak levels with Survival Shield, Nascent Iodine, Super Male Vitality, and Fluoride Shield. And wake up, America. Immune Support Blend is the healthy choice for the gourmet coffee lover. So get incredibly high-quality, freedom-based products and help fund the revolution at InfoWarsShop.com.
You are watching the InfoWars Nightly News, which airs 7 p.m. Central at InfoWarsNews.com. Members can share their passcodes with up to 11 other people, and your support is helping us defend liberty worldwide.